My name is Yuxian Wen. I'm Program Manager for Azure Networking, and I'll be co-presenting with Ross Ortega, also from Microsoft. And we also invited Jigar Shah from Palo Alto Network to talk about cross-premises connectivity. So today we're gonna focus on secure cross-premise connectivity and private connectivity to the cloud. We'll be primarily focused on VPN and ExpressRoute. And with Palo Alto, I mean, Jigar is gonna talk about how from the appliance perspective that you can actually use virtual appliances from Azure Marketplace to connect securely from your premises to the cloud. And they will talk about how, what's their perspective of cloud security and cloud connectivity. So this is the outline for today, right? So I'll talk about VPN and a little bit about the first party appliances that we're building, application gateway and web application firewall that we announced for preview today, this week. And Jigar will talk about Palo Alto appliances, and Ross will close with ExpressRoute. Okay, so I really like to start with the marketing slide. The pictures are pretty, and I'll admit I cannot make slides like that. This is wonderful. And you've probably seen this slide from Jason Zander's keynote and Yusuf Khalidi, the networking CVP's keynote already. But the message here is that Azure has built a massive global data center infrastructure. So we have data centers pretty much in most of the continents in the world. With that, we actually also built a massive global network connecting all our data centers together, right? So we don't talk about this fact a lot, but if you go from one Azure data center to another Azure data center, you are actually traversing Microsoft network, not the internet. Okay, so this is kind of the parallel universe. I mean, you can connect via the internet directly to the other data center, but if you get into the one Microsoft data center, from there, you connect to another region of the Microsoft Azure or Microsoft services, you are actually on Microsoft network, right? So today's talk, we're gonna talk about how you can tap into this network, how you connect from your premises anywhere into this global network, and you can traverse from that point to anywhere in the Microsoft cloud. And also, yeah, sure, you can also use that as a transit, and that's part of what we're gonna talk about today and show you how you can do it. I have a very simple demo showing you a cool topology that you can build. So, I mean, we always start with, okay, hybrid cloud, the buzzword. What is hybrid cloud? I mean, this one is actually pretty old. So on your right-hand side, it's actually cloud. That's what cloud is, in the sense that those are the features, those are the services you as a customer touch. And typically what happened is that even though our mission is to enable you to bring you to the cloud, to run your stuff in the cloud, right? Invariably, there's always gonna be cases that you have stuff you cannot move, right? Business critical data for compliance, for your security purposes that you cannot move yet. Or, I mean, fundamentally, the users, your customers or your users most likely will not be in the cloud. I mean, cloud data center is like in the middle of nowhere. You're not gonna move your customers or users there, right? So, and that is okay. There's cloud and there's your side of the network. And hybrid cloud is how we enable you to connect to each other. And that's also why I still have a job. Okay, so we start with a big picture, right? So what is, basically this is from the networking perspective, what are you getting, what we provide from Azure, right? So this shows your virtual machine, what you are deploying and running in the cloud, right? So virtual network is really the foundation of the Azure SDN, if you want to put it into that term, right? So you bring your network to the cloud, you bring your topology, IP addresses, subnet segmentation. We allow you to use security group. You can define firewalls, you can define basically different zones inside your virtual network. And you can use routing to actually dictate how the traffic flows. And this is both within the virtual network. I mean, if you're front-end, back-end, you might need to place virtual appliances, firewalls, and to kind of inspect the traffic, right? And also what gets routed to and from your premises, right? Of course, lots of people, lots of customers run internet front-end application in the cloud. So these are accepting requests directly from the internet. And we do have a bunch of services, public IP addresses associated with your VM, or it can be load balanced. And something we don't really talk about a lot is the DDoS protection. It's not the subject of this talk, but I will say that everything you run in Azure with a public IP address actually is under our DDoS protection. and we have massive amount of basically the DDoS capacity to absorb, not just coming directly from the internet, but also cross region. So the DDoS protection, and this is one of the rare instances we actually run off the shell appliances rather than doing this in software, because the capacity requirement is just way too big. So anything you have in Azure is under this protection. Now, the focus of today's talk is actually on the backend connectivity. So compared with frontend, frontend is directly coming from the internet, stuff that you cannot trust and you should not trust, right? So the backend connectivity is typically secure. I mean, you use tunneling protocol, IPsec, IKE, and those kind of things, and this is ExpressRoute using private connectivity directly tapped into the cloud. So these are part of your security parameter. But even then, we will talk about how you can set up a DMZ in your cloud, actually inspecting the traffic, even going across this backend connectivity links. Okay, so again, we're gonna talk about the options of how you connect to the cloud, right? So you always have the internet connectivity. And by the way, this is totally optional. You can deploy a closed off deployment in the cloud with only backend connectivity. So you decide whether you want to open to the internet or not directly from your cloud deployment. And you can only, and for some cases, there are definitely a lot of customers only have closed off virtual network deployed in the cloud. The only way to connect to the cloud deployment is via the backend side-to-side VPN, ExpressRoute, or even other point-to-site connectivity, right? So the spectrum basically is from internet connectivity, and we have point-to-site, right? Point-to-site, this is basically, a lot of you are familiar with the concept. This is a VPN client-to-server connectivity, right? So typically the experience for most of the enterprise users are that you go to your IT portal, or your VPN client is already pre-provisioned to the company issue images or laptops and stuff like that, and you use that to securely remote or tap into your corporate network. And in Azure, we also offer similar services. The experience is very, very similar. So you deploy the virtual network, deploy the gateway, and then you actually set up your, today we're doing certificate-based authentication. So you set up your certificate hierarchy. You download the VPN client from the Azure portal, install on the user's laptop, and you can remote into, in this case, your Azure network. Right, so the experience is very similar. Unfortunately, and this is great in the sense that for a small-scale deployment, 5, 20, we can support up to 128 users concurrently. Right, you can connect from anywhere. The protocol is SSL, is TLS-based. So this is SSTP, Secure Socket Tunneling Protocol. You can do it from this conference room, from airport, from hotel, and stuff like that. The bandwidth won't be big because this is basically you have TCP over TCP, right? So any sort of delay, any sort of packet loss is gonna kind of just multiply the throughput that you can get. Of course, then you're moving on to the site-to-site connectivity. That's what we're gonna focus a lot today, right? What scenario we can enable, and this is infrastructure network-to-network connectivity. Right, and this is stable. You have your VPN, you on-premises, you have your Cisco, Palo Alto, Juniper on-premises connecting securely using IPsec, IKE to the cloud. And finally, we have ExpressRoute. This is a private direct connectivity if you already have a WAN provider doing your branch-to-branch, basically the connecting your branch offices, your headquarters and stuff like that. Azure will be able to appear just like another branch office in your MPLS network. And for certain customers, they actually have equipment in the cloud exchange, such as Equinix in North America. In that sense, it's even better. Figuratively speaking, it's almost like you just throw two wires from your router in your cage to the Azure router in our cage, and you tap into the Microsoft network. Of course, the direct connectivity does offer you a lot better throughput. We go from 50 megabits per second all the way to 10 gigabits per second, right? So these are the spectrum of options that you have to connect to the cloud. Now, we actually have a couple of new features. So we are highlighting what are the options for you to connect in the cloud. This is within Azure, right? So I just mentioned that we have global data centers, right? So you have something in the US, you want to deploy something in Japan, something in Europe, something in Australia. How do they talk to each other, right? The virtual machine can always talk to each other using the public IP addresses allocated to the virtual machine. And as I mentioned, even though these are on public IP addresses from, let's say, US West data center all the way to Japan East, for example, right? They're still traversing the Microsoft network, not the internet. Although once you open this up, yes, the public IP address is visible or reachable from anywhere in the internet. So you do need to be careful about a security group. You want firewall protection, or you want to place a firewall appliances in front of it. That's what you need to do for sure. Now, for the back end, in the sense that this is the private connectivity between your deployment rather than facing the internet, you can use VNet peering. This is the new feature we announced generally available this week. It's an exciting feature. In the same region, basically, you are merging the multiple virtual networks into one. So I will talk a little bit about what that enables from the scenario perspective, but Narayan will talk a lot more about the detail of VNet peering in basically the session right after this one. So you have cool demo, you can see about how you set up the peering, how they work together and stuff like that. I'll be focusing more on the transit portion, as in one virtual network leveraging the appliance or the VPN gateway of the other virtual network to facilitate cross-premises connectivity. This is in the same region. From the VM perspective, it is direct connectivity. You are not going through kind of a gateway in between. So what we already have is that, before this week, is that VNet to VNet using gateway. And this can work either in the same region or across different regions in Azure, right? So the difference here is that this is kind of a dumbbell topology, if you think about it. You have a virtual network here, a virtual network here, connecting via a site-to-site VPN tunnel from the two gateway. So your bandwidth, your throughput is going to be constrained, but it does offer cross-region connectivity in a secure fashion. Again, all of this is all traverses within the Microsoft network, not the internet. That's what I want to highlight. And there are definitely some points and characteristics that we listed in the deck. You can take a look. Now, this is just another picture showing you the spectrum of options, right? So point to site, no infrastructure. This works on laptop, desktop, and you just need to download a VPN client, create a virtual network and gateway in Azure. Moving down a little bit, the site-to-site VPN, you do need infrastructure, even though, yes, you can use software-based VPN devices on your site. Typically, enterprise customer or larger customer, you also have a spectrum of VPN devices. I mean, some can cost as low as within $1,000 and as high as a big, beefy security appliances. They all work. Of course, at the bottom, I should flip. It's actually a lot more value prop. You have a private WAN connectivity, dedicated connectivity into the cloud. And if you notice the picture on your right-hand side, there are slight differences, right? For site-to-site and point-to-site VPN, this is for you to connect to the virtual machines you have running in the virtual network. Notice that for express route connectivity, it's not just to the virtual machines or your cloud services that you deploy. It includes the PaaS, platform as a service that Microsoft offers. I mean, Azure Storage, SQL Azure, and we offer, I lost count, there's so many services that you can reach. And you can use the dedicated bandwidth, higher bandwidth directly from your premises to those services. And of course, we also offer connectivity to Office 365 and other Microsoft services. So as you can tell, this is not just a connectivity to Azure, even though it is a big focus, but the way we're pushing this is that this is your connectivity, your entry point into Microsoft network and Microsoft services. Okay, so let's switch gear, talking about VPN. So a little bit of what I will be covering, BGP, Active Gateway for reliability, I'll talk about peering, security, of course. I mean, in the past, we typically focus on features rather than scenarios. So we're trying to actually tell you, okay, we have these new features and how they enable scenarios that you can do now, but not before. And in the last one, we have this classic deployment model, Azure Service Management, and the Azure Resource Management model. We actually completed the migration work. So you can actually migrate a virtual network with gateway or the VMs inside from service management interface to the ARM deployment model. So we'll talk about that a little bit, just covering how that's done. Now, before I start, because this is a 300-level talk, so I thought I'd cover a little bit of the taxonomy. What are the type of VPNs? And this has often caused a lot of confusions as well. So fundamentally, and this is not the term Microsoft invented, I think the industry uses these two terms extensively, a route-based VPN and a policy-based VPN. What are the differences? Fundamentally, as the names imply, one is a router, the other one is a firewall, if you will, right? So from the routing side of things, basically, how the traffic, the difference here is that how the VPN gateway or the firewall decide what traffic gets encrypted or not. That's the fundamental difference. On the route-based VPN side of things, this is where you use the routing table, BGP, to direct traffic in and out of the tunnel. And as your routing changes, right, for example, BGP is a dynamic routing protocol, right? You can actually add, remove prefixes. As those changes, if you have specific prefixes as your rule, those traffic will get dropped, even though your intent is to direct them in and out of the tunnel. So typically for route-based, for a router-based VPN, I mean, the security rule for IPsec is any-to-any or wildcard. Policy-based, on the other hand, fundamentally, those are firewall-based devices, and they basically inspect the traffic. So there, you have to specify exactly what prefixes you want to communicate, right? So the example I'm showing you here is that, let's say your on-premises is using 10.1, your virtual network is using 10.2 and 10.3. You have to enumerate those prefixes. Of course, you can use any-to-any, but typically a firewall-based devices typically don't allow you to do that. I mean, there are exceptions, but yeah, I mean, you know what I mean. So that actually resulted in a couple of differences. On the Azure side today, for route-based VPN, we can support between 10 to 30 tunnels or 30 sites you can connect from your virtual networks to your on-premises locations, right? So these are using the route-based VPN based on the size of the VPN or the skills of the VPN, Azure VPN you created. On the policy-based VPN today, we can only support one site, and that's something that we're working to relax because there is a lot of popular firewall-based VPN device, and it is a constraint that is very constraining. Let's just put it this way. Lots of customers, I mean, you may not have 200 or 3,000 sites, but one is actually typically not enough. On the route-based VPN side, though, you will see we actually are doing a lot of enhancement because BGP is a very powerful feature for transit, for dynamically updating the prefixes, for tunneling, for allow you to force or redirect the traffic to on-premises for inspections and such, right? So you will see that a lot of our innovation actually is on the route-based VPN side. So they each have their pros and cons, and you have to decide based on what you have and based on what you need. Now, let's talk about transit. So this is actually very exciting. So we released the BGP feature early this year. I think it's about April, May timeframe. So this is the first time we're talking about this in a public forum, right? So BGP, of course, is the dynamic, kind of the de facto routing protocol that most cloud and most enterprise uses for advertising crossing the boundary, right? There are IGP that you run within your corporate network, and there are BGP or EGP that you run across organization, right? So this is a de facto protocol that we use with your VPN gateway on premises to exchange the prefixes. Basically, so you deploy something in Azure, right? The example that I use are all very simple. You have VNet 1, 10.11, 12, VNet 2, 10.21, 10.22, for example, right? This is where the Azure VPN gateway tells you that, by the way, if you want to get to 10.11 and 10.12, come to me, right? So if you look at this picture, VNet 1 gateway is gonna do this advertisement to the on-premises site 5, VNet 3, and VNet 2. So you establish BGP peerings with different VPN gateway that you specify, right? And then the next question is, now, VNet 1 tells VNet 2 that, yeah, by the way, you can get to me if you want to reach 10.11, 10.12, and VNet 1 also received the advertisement, the BGP advertisement or route announcement from on-premises site 5, and that is on your right-hand side, right? So VNet 1 will turn around and tell VNet 2 and VNet 3 using BGP to say, by the way, you can reach me for my prefixes, and also you can get to on-premises site 5, let's say 10.51, 10.52, through me. And this change will propagate, right? So this will enable transit routing such that even though site 4 on your right-hand side is the right or left, site 4 is not directly connected to VNet 3, VNet 1, or on-premises site 5. Site 4 actually will get all the prefixes advertised to him or to that location, to the gateway, so that it'll know how to get to all the other not directly connected networks or locations. And that is transit routing. So you can notice that the BGP feature is not just for Azure VPN gateway to your on-premises VPN device. it's also between the Azure gateways that we can facilitate BGP. You can enable BGP and the transit routing. Of course, in this case, if you are really familiar with this, you will see there is a loop with the traffic just circle around forever without getting out, right? In a nutshell, BGP as a routing protocol, they built in the loop prevention mechanism. It'll actually figure out the shortest path in terms of hop count, right? So in this case, if VNet 1 wants to get to site 4, the shortest path, of course, is just go to VNet 2 directly rather than going via 3, 2, and then 4, right? So those BGP will just take care of it automatically for you. What happened is that if, let's say, VNet 1 to VNet 2 tunnel is somehow disconnected or it's down, then what happened is BGP will actually recalculate the route. And in this case, for your user, it'll be just like automatically fail over from the direct connection between 1 to 2, and it'll see 1, 3, 2 actually still works. It'll direct the traffic that way. So it's a very important and well-understood, highly available mechanism for you to make sure that you have multiple paths, you have redundancies. And in this case, I just put in some geographical location as an example, right? So if you East 2, you can go to Central, which is in Chicago, and US West in California. So you can actually have geo-redundancy even within Microsoft Network, path redundancy in this case. Now, with BGP, we also enable you to have path diversity between one Azure virtual network and one of your locations, right? Before, you can only have one tunnel. Now we enable you to have two. So let's say this is your corporate headquarters, this is your primary data center. For you, some of the more critical network, they actually have redundancy, as in they may have two ISPs and two VPN devices totally separated path out to the internet. In this case, from the Azure VPN gateway, you can establish two tunnels to your two VPN devices. These are actually counted as two connections, and you enable BGP, they will fail over between the two, just as I described. Right, so this is a redundancy on your end of the network. And the new feature we also announced is that you can also do redundancy on the Azure side. So what happened here is that since the beginning, when customers like you deploy an Azure VPN network, VPN gateway, we always deploy two software instances of the gateway internally. You see one gateway is actually two instances running in active standby configuration. And as Azure roll over our infrastructure, sometimes we update our infrastructure, sometimes we upgrade our gateway, we do this update one by one. Right? They would never be down in the planned maintenance at the same time, but there is a switchover time. Right? Let's say we bring the active instance down for maintenance and there'll be a switchover time between 10 to 30 seconds. The second gateway takes over. Right? But here, we basically enable you. We have two instances. We're going to enable you to leverage two instances simultaneously. And that's the demo that I'm going to show you in a minute. So in this case, you can imagine, so basically there are two VIPs, two public IP addresses on the Azure side talking to two public IP addresses, two VPN devices on your side, and there are four tunnels established total. Even if we bring one instance down for maintenance, their connectivity will switch over automatically or already flowing via the other instance. So we just open this up to ensure that we can get to zero downtime for any of our planned maintenance. Okay, so that's what I'm gonna show now. Let me switch over. Oh, okay, before I switch over, actually, it's easier, it's actually, unfortunately, it's not very easy to show topology. I can show you who's connected to what, but this is the topology I'm going to show. So exactly the same triangular topology. You have two on-premises locations connected to two virtual network gateway, and I'm going to show basically the active-active portion and also the route portion of this topology. Okay, so the convention that I use should be very easy to follow, right? So you saw VNet 1, VNet 2, VNet 3, so I put them in separate resource groups. So you have our resource group 1, 2, 3 representing the three virtual networks. And this resource group 5 actually represent the on-premises network. It only has a local network side, which is the Azure resource representation of your on-premises network. So let's go into the first one. So this is actually the one connecting to site 5, right? So as you can see, let me zoom in a little bit. may not be that easy to see. So it has a VPN gateway right here, VNet1 gateway. It has three connections, VNet1 to site 5, VNet1 to VNet2, and VNet1 to VNet3, if you remember the triangular topology, right? And what I set up actually from site 5, that is actually a Cisco router in my office connecting to a virtual machine in the back end. So that's actually a real on-premises location. I set up active connection between the on-premises location to VNet1 and VNet1 to VNet2. So two of those connections are actually active. So let's look at this one. Let's look at the gateway. So unfortunately, this feature is not yet available from Portal. So I'm going to have to show PowerShell first. OK, so this is the gateway. Let me see if you can see this a little bit easier. So I'm going to show the detail of the first gateway. Right. So a lot of this is nitty-gritty detail. It's not as pretty as you can see on the portal. But what you can notice here is that for the gateway IP configuration, right, so there is first public IP addresses and there is the second public IP addresses. So in terms of flow, it's exactly the same. It's just that you need to create one more public IP address and assign to the gateway before you create a gateway. Once you do that, and of course, if you have an existing active standby gateway, it's a matter of just adding another IP address, and then you can convert what you can convert the VPN, convert is probably the right term, upgrade your VPN gateway from active standby to active. And you notice that there is a flag here, active enabled. That's also a new element that we added. Now it's true now, right? So let's look at the connection. Because you really need to see two tunnels to believe, okay, this is not fake. We couldn't make the PowerShell deadline, so this is another thing that you're gonna see something ugly. So, Microsoft people look away. So here, my boss is there. Ross is my boss. He's gonna shake his head. I think. So here you're gonna see like the connectivity status, right? So it's connected, and we have the statistic to show you bytes in, bytes out, right? And this is gonna be very, very hideous, but that's the only way I can prove there are actually two tunnels going on. So if you dump the REST API call and the REST API responses, what you will see, and hopefully, and not hopefully, in a month, what you will get from PowerShell and a little bit later on the portal, you will be able to see per tunnel status. That's showing right here. So it's actually, like I said, it's actually two connections, two tunnels making up one a virtual network to VPN, to your on-premise VPN, right? So we're showing more detail here. It's called VNet1 to site 5. We actually basically added the gateway VIP to differentiate the two tunnels here. And you can see individually the status, whether they're connected or disconnected, and the bytes in, bytes out statistics. All right, so this you will be able to get this in PowerShell and also in Portal by end of this year, I promise. Now, let's get back. So that is the active portion. Now, let's look at the route. So if you go back, let's go back to this gateway. So you see that this gateway has three connections. Remember the triangular topology, right? Let's look at a virtual machine in the top of the triangle in VNet3. That one is only connected to the virtual network 1 and virtual network 2, not directly connected to anything else, right? So let's go to RG3. This is the top of the triangle, right? So let's zoom in a little bit, right? So the gateway only have 3-to-1 and 3-to-2 connection, as you can see. Now, the thing that I want to show you is also a new feature that we released this week. Now you can actually see the actual routes, both what you specify in the user-defined route, peering, and also the gateway route getting to the VM. Before, it's actually hard for you to see. Now you can actually see per NIC what are the routes that Azure infrastructure provision based on your specification, based on whatever BGP advertised via from on-premises to you, right? So let's look at this one. It's actually under, so I'm clicking on the virtual machine, and it's on the network interfaces, right? And the new thing you will see is effective routes and effective security group rules. So once again, the next session after this one, we'll talk a lot about that in more detail. Oh, sorry. What happened here? So let's do effective route. So let me shrink a little bit so you can see what's going on. So this is going to take a little bit of time, because what happened here is that once you click on this link, the API goes all the way to the host of the virtual machine. So this literally goes into the data, I mean, the command reaches the data center, reaches the host hosting your VM, and then comes back to show what's actually there, right? So you can see that there are different sources of the routes provisioned for your VM, right? So the default, this is VNet 3, remember? So 31, 32, this is the default virtual network route. This is the network itself. And you can see that from the VPN gateway, virtual network gateway, you are learning a bunch of routes, right? As you can see here. Let me zoom in a little bit so you can probably see better. From virtual network gateway, you are seeing 10.12, 10.52, 51. Remember the numbering convention, right? So 1 is 11, 12, 2 is 22, 21, 5 is 51, 52. And I lied, I was lazy, so I didn't set up site 4, so you don't see 41, 42 here. But you can see that these routes are from virtual network gateway. It can be static route, or it can be BGP learned route. In this case, it is BGP learned route. And you can see what's the next hop. And in this case, though, the next hop is the Azure VPN gateway. So the VIP doesn't really matter that much. The IP address is actually the VIP of the VPN gateway, right? And we are also working on, so this is very cool in the sense that you can see what the virtual machine is getting. And we are also working on the API to let you see, from the gateway perspective, what we are advertising to you and what you are advertising to us. So this should show up maybe in a month or two, but unfortunately, we don't have it ready for this conference. Okay? So let me switch back. So once again, this is a topology that you just see. And the virtual machine that I show actually is in VNet 3. So you see the route from 1, from 2, from 5, from site 5, right? And I show you the connection from site 5 to site the VNet 1. That's actually two tunnels hidden, well, that's kind of masqueraded inside the one connection that you set up. Okay? Now, the next portion, I will talk about peering and transit. Again, VNet peering is the feature that lets you merge, combine two virtual networks together. You can do this, and you can do this only in the same region, but it can be across the subscription boundary, different account, and it's a mutual authentication, so you don't need to worry about somebody just randomly peer to you and get into your network. Of course, the constraint is just like site-to-site VPN, ExpressRoute, any private connectivity, you have to have different address spaces. I mean, if the address space collide, we will actually fail the operation that you requested, right? So the key point I'm going to touch upon here is the transit. As in this case, we're showing a hub and spoke topology. The spoke VNets can actually leverage the appliances, including the Azure VPN gateways, or you have third-party VPN appliances, you can leverage those in the hub VNet using transit, using user-defined route, and of course, security group work across. You can specify the security group back and forth. So in order for VNet 1, we're showing VNet 1, sorry, is this the department 1 is actually using the hub to get back on-premises, either VPN gateway or express route. Now, the transit is a per-peering property. So in this case, we are showing only one of the VNet is using transit. The other one will not be able to do it. So you have total control on what can go and what cannot go, okay? And the picture will look like this, right? So from the VNet 10.2, once you have peering, enable the, I think it's called gateway transit property on the VNet, and VNet 10.2 can actually use VNet 1 to get back on premises. And all the routes, if you enable that and you go to get effective route, you're going to see those routes, even though VNet 2 doesn't have a gateway. Okay, so because I don't have this set up, Narayan will show the demo, but if you do that, you get effective route, you're going to see all the routes from the peering perspective, from the gateway perspective, you're going to see different sources. It'll all be there. Right. So hub and spoke is actually a very powerful model rather than comparing with just the regular VNet and subnet topology, right? So on the next portion, I'm going to talk about DMZ, okay? So this is a very hot topic. Oh, apologize for the fonts that you cannot see. So in this case, right, this is a single virtual network. How do you set up a DMZ? With user-defined route and security group, you can set it up today. But until very recently, the Azure VPN gateway actually is outside of the DMZ or inside of the DMZ, whatever you call it. As in, if you get to the Azure VPN gateway, it'll go directly to the VM. You cannot inspect the traffic between the VPN gateway and the VMs. But now you can. We enable you to actually set up your routing table on the gateway subnet so you can direct the traffic coming in and out of the tunnel to a security appliances inside your virtual network for inspection. Right? So the common question we often get is, how much should you trust the cloud? Right? And the question is a little bit iffy. I mean, it's in the cloud, I cannot kick it, I cannot touch it, I cannot shut it down and stuff like that, right? So now you can inspect the traffic, not just directly in and out of the internet, even cross-prem traffic you can inspect as well. You can go through all the security stuff that you have. So this is enabled for a single virtual network, but with peering, it is much more powerful in the sense that, again, apologize for the black text inside of the gray background. Instead of just subnet, now you can have a DMZ VNet, virtual network, being the DMZ for a number of virtual network behind. Why do you want to set up different virtual network? I mean, you might ask the question, but a lot of corporation, enterprises, even smaller company or institution, you have different teams, you have different groups, different divisions. For accounting purposes, they have to set things up in different accounts. In that case, they have to sit in different virtual network because that's our administrative boundary that you can do. But then, if you want to set up the appliances, especially security appliances for every one of this virtual network, even including our VPN gateway, the cost will add up, right? If your performance can sustain, of course, they are sharing the same VNet, they are sharing the same VMs, appliances, and gateway, you have to be mindful about how much throughput, how much bandwidth constraint that you can sustain. But this does enable you to have a hub and spoke topology with transit enabled, with the peering. You can actually share the same DMZ, VPN gateway, network virtual appliances, Palo Alto's here, I'm gonna say share Palo Alto virtual appliances, right? So this is actually incredibly powerful. And I think maybe John or Narayan in the next session, they will talk about this as well. So John has a very cool demo about basically how the DMZ set up with NSGs with user-defined route. Okay, so the last one is probably a familiar topic, right? So we enable you to do this for a while, forced tunneling, right? This is the feature that allow you to redirect or forced all the internet-bound traffic. Originally, it'll go direct to the internet, which may not be good for some of your scenario. If you want to inspect the traffic, audit the traffic that's going in and out of the internet, you don't want that. So the feature allows you to redirect the traffic back via one of the side-to-side VPN tunnel or even express route to your on-premises. Then you can do proxy, you can do auditing, you can inspect the traffic, whatever you need to do. And they may go out to the internet directly from your, from your on-premises, or you can block it, just drop it. So you have that freedom. And the way to set this up is you actually set up a default route on your VPN gateway. This will cover the entire virtual network. And for individual subnet that need to face the internet, there's a little bit of change. You can use user-defined route to add a default route saying default route going to the internet. You can do this on a per subnet basis as I draw in this particular picture. For express route, well, you're using BGP, and it's very simple. If you announce the default route from your on-premises to Azure, and we will honor the default route, we will advertise this to all the entire virtual network to facilitate forced tunneling. And if you have peering enabled, the peered VNet with transit enabled will also get those default route advertisement as well, as I was just showing. Okay, so the last part is a little bit different. So we have this, as I mentioned earlier, we have the security, the Azure Service Management Interface, what we call the classic deployment model, versus the newer one is ARM, right? Azure Resource Management Deployment Model. So we have the feature to allow you to migrate the VMs and in the VNet, I think for a couple of months now. So what we enable here is that now you can also migrate the gateway. Before, if you have a VPN gateway, Azure gateway inside of your VNet, the migration will fail. As in the validate, you will not pass validation. It will not enable you to migrate. But now we enable the capability to migrate a virtual network with Azure VPN gateway. Of course, the one that you probably cannot see is ExpressRoute Gateway. We are working on that and application gateway, right? So this is including your VPN gateway, your public IP addresses, security group, and user-defined route. Fundamentally, this is a metadata migration in the backend, but we are trying to be conservative. So you should expect some downtime, But if I were you guys, frankly, my best advice is just set a dummy classic virtual network up, a gateway, and give it a try and see how it works, right? So I think it's a two-phase thing. We will do the validation first. If the validation failed, because for whatever reason, there's resource inside of your classic VNet that we cannot migrate, we will actually not do the migration and tell you why. Only when you pass the validation, then the next step. I mean, this is not the detailed operation here, but only when you pass the validation, then you can move on to the next stage to actually do the migration. Okay, so I've been taking a lot of time. So the next part, we'll talk about virtual appliances. So before Jiga gets on stage, he's very eager. So I'm gonna do that. No. Hey, come on. So we also have first party virtual appliances. I won't go over this at all. It's application gateway, layer 7, basically doing layer 7, load balancing, and also traffic redirection based on HTTP. We released the web application firewall feature in preview this week. And there's a session at noon. The last session, you guys are in the home stretch, we will talk about this in a lot more detail, how you use this feature, what's coming, and what kind of skill structure that we have. But enough of that. So with this, Microsoft is always about building an ecosystem. And I think 2 years back, we invited a couple of appliance vendors on stage to talk about their stuff in Azure. And today, we invite Jiga from Palo Alto Network to talk about their perspective, how they build their appliances in the cloud, how their perspective about vision about cloud security and connectivity. Okay, Jiga.
All right. Can you hear me fine? Yes? No? Okay, there we go. All right, thanks, Yushin. So the point is to sort of explain that, you know, in the public cloud, like Azure provides a lot of native security services, right? You've got ACLs, NSG, and obviously all the platform security that Yushin talked about, right? Now, once a packet hits a VNet, it's kind of your responsibility to protect whatever goes inside that virtual network, right? Microsoft's given you a lot of capabilities in there, but once the packet hits the VNet, you got to protect the deployment. So a lot of customers are already using our products on-prem, and they would like to get the same type of security in the cloud. So I'll give a very brief idea in terms of what we do as a platform on-prem and explain how that's relevant in the Azure world. So if you look at the left side of the picture, we started as a firewall company. We created what's called a Synexion firewall. And the idea is we want to identify all applications, enable that application on a per user basis based on your AD group, and then start looking at the traffic for known malware. So if there's any of the millions of known malware files, there's signatures on the firewall to protect traffic going through and say block known malware. Well, what happens if there's an unknown malware, right? Zero-day attacks, variants of the known malware. It'll take us a day or a week to turn around and create a signature normally. So what we did is, in addition to what the firewall does inside itself, there's also a massively large cloud, that's the top side of the picture, where we've got thousands, tens of thousands of customers that are subscribing to that cloud service. And what that cloud service offers is a sandbox, essentially. When we see an unknown threat, it goes to the cloud service, we open it in a sandbox, figure out if it's a malicious file, and then we send down signatures to every single customer. So this happens in 5 minutes. There's always a patient zero, in effect. Once we see an unknown malware, it goes up to the cloud, it's figured out, and then every single firewall knows about it. So that's the point of saying, turn the unknown into a known malware. There's other elements of like the endpoint and so on, but I won't talk about that. But the point is, now you've got this amazingly capable firewall that is all focused on prevention and not about remediation and forensic. Those are other folks who do that. Our goal is to help you protect that environment, right? Now, this capability is actually complementary to what the NSG offers, right? For example, in scenarios we have, let's say, internet-facing applications, right? And you will open up port 80 and 443 because these are typical web apps. It's always a good practice that you enable just 80 and 443, for example, in the NSG, the network security group that Azure offers. That way you reduce the attack surface. Now, what comes inside of that 40 and 443 is what we would protect at that point. Now, you can open up all the ports for, let's say, your internet-facing application, and fine. Then you will see people trying to attack on all ports. And it's kind of a fun experiment that you put up a simple web server on Azure, give it a public IP, and try to see how much people try to brute force you. It's just so much fun to sort of figure out, you know, how open the internet's become. So this is what we essentially are looking to bring to the Azure environment, and then provide that same level of protection that you see on-prem, but just that now that you're in public cloud, you have a lot more actors trying to do all kinds of different things, right? So I'm not going to go through this, but this is sort of a common pattern of, you know, attack vectors where people come in, they move laterally, try to grab your PCI or PII data, which is the most valuable part, right, and exfiltrate it. There's also other trends that you see in the right bottom that people are doing interesting things when they take over your machines, which is beyond stealing data, it's like build a botnet because you have this VM, somebody spun up. Nobody's carefully monitoring anymore because the developer or the admin is running it, and it's in the cloud. People don't pay attention to those things. Or a newer thing we're starting to see is people start harvesting, using those machines to do Bitcoin harvesting. You know, very bizarre, interesting trends. But let's talk about specific scenarios. So this week, Yusuf announced a few features, and so I'll talk about how they're going to be very applicable to your use cases. Right? So I'll talk primarily about internet-facing deployments because they are extremely common. There's also implications of what the new announcements are for hybrid cloud. We'll cover them at a future date. So at Ignite, Microsoft announced these features, and they're going to be available in the next coming months. So the first one was providing multiple public IPs to a virtual machine, which means even for the firewall that we provide in the Azure Marketplace, that opens up a number of use case scenarios. The idea is that you want visibility, control, and prevention in those internet-facing or internal deployments. So one deployment model is you've got a bunch of applications you're serving out to the open internet. We've got, you know, on the firewall's first interface, I'm calling it Untrust 1, just as a label. And now you can assign multiple public IPs to that VM, which means you can host multiple applications off that same interface of the firewall, right? And on the inside, you obviously have all your web tier, database tier, and so on. And like Yushin was mentioning, there's UDR, right? User-defined routing. That allows you to control on a per app tier level what traffic gets inspected and say, oh, I'm going from web to DB, allow SQL traffic only, and the user group should be maybe my database admin only. That's the only user traffic that should go between the two. Nobody else should be going. And it's only SQL traffic, and if there's malware trying to go across, we will block it, right? That's kind of our capability. So that's use case one, where you've hosted multiple applications of a single interface. Because maybe they're similar applications or similar related things, you know? This could be the same site hosting the mobile section and the desktop version of the same application, for example. There's a variant that you could do, so you got multiple IPs on the same interface, or you could have multiple IPs across multiple interfaces, right? You want some specific separation at a trust level so that the app 3 and app 4 have a different level of trust, and you can apply different sets of policies to them, right? So this is one sort of major improvement for you in a deployment case. Previously, you would have to deploy multiple firewalls to sort of segment them and provide protection, right? Okay, now obviously the cloud is all about scale out, so having a single appliance is kind of okay for small deployments, but when you're serving to the cloud scale, you really need scale out. So this architecture does not need any of the preview features. This works today, and here's how it works. For most of web-related applications, you would rather use a web load balancer, right? So this is the Azure Application Gateway, one of the PaaS capabilities that Azure offers. And so this is a layer 7 load balancer that deals with web traffic. It's got a lot of cool features like SSL offload, X 404 header insertion in there, so your web servers can actually know the client IP in case you were doing any geolocation services and so on, right? But this is a classic load balancer sandwich, right? Web server load balancer on the front end sends traffic to a bunch of firewalls in the back end, and then the firewall is in turn sending it to an internal layer 4 load balancer that Azure offers. So this allows the security tier in the middle to scale out, and on the back end, your web or application front end can scale out. And you can also use additional features of the web load balancer on the front end to create separate pools of firewalls. You could say abc.com goes to this pool of firewalls. abc.com/mobile or mobile.abc.com goes to this other pool of firewalls in case you're doing separate or different kinds of policies, right? So it allows sort of more sophisticated deployment models for scale out. So this works today, right? So I talked about a preview feature, an existing feature, and I'm going to confuse you by saying there's another option, right? So the Azure Load Balancer also offers additional features. Now, this is another enhancement that's going to come where what if, okay, so this is, okay, an older picture. Okay, so what if you're not doing web and you just want generic protocol support, right? Because you've got different kinds of applications, UDP, all kinds of TCP ports and so on. So you would like a more generic load balancer sandwich. So this is the capability that once is released from Microsoft, it was announced this week, it's gonna come out in the next few months, is that on the front end, also you're using a layer 4 load balancer, right? You got a layer 4 load balancer, behind it is any number of firewalls that you need, and again, an internal load balancer that front ends your front end. So this gives you that sort of very generic scale out capability, and that's what the cloud is about. So as you need more firewalls, you spin them up. As you need more web servers or whatever the app server is, you spin them up. So this obviously can also work on hybrid use cases. It's not restricted to the public facing ones. So in general, what we see is that as NVA, right, network virtual appliance, basically a firewall, a third-party firewall from the marketplace, we see four common use cases. The first one, the most common one, like Yushin mentioned, is hybrid. And this is a lot of customers moving their workloads into the cloud. So that's the first picture on the left side. And obviously, even there also, you can do a good job at protecting your environment in the cloud by having a really good on-prem firewall also, and not just a VPN gateway on-prem. Because you can do that deeper inspection and say, you know, if a cloud VM gets compromised, and usually a cloud VM gets compromised when, you know, usually I know my developers, they're the laziest guys when they spin up a VM. They're like, admin, I just need it for one day, I'm gonna test it and shut it off. And then they go home for the weekend and then they just leave it open. And that means if you have a VPN tunnel open, bad people are trying to go down that pipe, right, onto on-prem. So it's all about good best practices and security. So obviously you would like to have a firewall on-prem that terminates that VPN also. The middle section, the segmentation, is sort of twofold, right? One is inside your VNet, you're doing tier one to tier two protection, right? So this is where UDR comes in. So you can say, when I'm going from my web tier to database tier, or web tier to app, and app to database, allow only specific types of traffic, do that deeper inspection. The other variation on segmentation I'll call is the VNet to VNet connection that Yushin was showing, right? Because what's happening, as he explained, is no company goes entirely into one VNet. Every department gets a VNet, every application gets a VNet, and there's different levels of trust. IT may control one VNet because it's got the VPN gateway to on-prem. That's a highly secure VNet. It's running shared services like AD, file services, databases, and so on. And the other VNets are running lower levels of trust, partners, departments, or even developers, right? And then the more common one that I talked about, which is internet-facing ones. So the firewall at the head end is protecting the north-south traffic. And the last one, a little more specialized, is that because Azure has that massive global footprint that Yushin was showing, right, 34 data centers around the world, what if you could make the mobile security and remote access security a little better? Classically, when you did VPN, every VPN client would usually have split tunneling, right? So you're sitting in a Starbucks coffee shop. If you're going to the internet, you go directly to the internet through the internet connection that the Starbucks coffee shop provides. And if you're going to corporate, you go on the VPN tunnel, which means man-in-the-middle attack is an extremely easy one to do. Ideally, you want to inspect every single bit of traffic that the user's generating. Now, that would require you to hairpin all the traffic back to corporate, right? Let's say my data center's in the US, I'm traveling to Singapore, all my traffic is going from Singapore all the way to the US. That kind of sucks. It's going to give you really bad performance, even for internet-bound traffic. So ideally, what you would have is VPN infrastructure that is globally spread out. Now, with Azure's Data Center Fabric, you can run the virtual machine for the firewall that's a VPN gateway that's spread around the world. You have one device in all regions you want to serve. Each one, let's say, serves a few hundred users, And as you need to scale up, you spin up more VPN gateways. The user connects to the closest VPN gateway. All traffic inspections happens there. So for example, there is a data Azure region closest to the user. The client automatically connects to that. All firewalling happens there. If it's internet bound, it goes to the internet from that Azure POP. If it's bound for corporate, it goes on the Azure backhaul to your corporate. So this gives you amazingly spread out security, and you can now firewall all the traffic. And you can maybe now allow them, let's say, have access to Facebook. Previously, you may say, okay, no Facebook because we don't want to inspect your Facebook traffic, et cetera. Now, essentially, you inspect it all, but you allow all, in effect. So that gives you a more secure stance, in effect, right? Cool, so that's all I had. I'm gonna hand it back to Ross.
As Yushin mentioned, ecosystem's very important to Microsoft. It's core to our strategy. One of our big ecosystem plays is ExpressRoute. So ExpressRoute is private connectivity to Microsoft. So basically, it's kind of an interesting concept here. You can get to the Microsoft public cloud bypassing the internet. So there are a lot of advantages to this. One, we give you high bandwidth. So one of the announcements we had, and I'll cover in a minute, is UltraPerf Gateway, so 10 gigabits into your virtual network. So very high performance. The SLA's there, so you get very high SLA. We've been enhancing over overall reliability across Azure, so now you'll see a 99.95% SLA from us. Right? So we're just trying to, like, what's the easiest way to get you into our cloud? And I'll cover some of the announcements that we've made since Ignite. One way to just think about it is, how do I get to the cloud? Now, in terms of the ecosystem, we require you to come in through a partner. So you can't just buy ExpressRoute from us and have it work. That's not how this works. You have to connect to us through a partner, and we do that for scale and to simplify your deployment architecture. So at the end of the day, private networking is a little more complicated than simple internet connectivity, and so we want our partners to help us help you get into our cloud. And we'll give you a lot of different options to connect to us. But so you can see here, you can think of this, ExpressRoute is a way to advertise prefixes to your on-premises. And we'll have three BGP sessions there. So at the bottom, what you see is private connectivity. So this is into your Azure virtual network. It's either RFC 1918 addresses, private IP addresses, or you can actually advertise some public IP addresses if you have them, but you have to treat them as private, right? So we do have customers that through acquisition no longer want to use RFC 1918, and so we've enabled that feature. Basically, the one way to think about that is just private connectivity into your virtual network. So you can extend your network, your subnets, right into the Azure data centers, right? And we offer this globally. So we make it seamless, and that's our fundamental goal. We want to make the network just disappear. So it's a seamless extension of your data center into our cloud. The next one, a little more confusing, is accessing public IP addresses in Azure. So one way to think about this is Azure storage, and that's one of the key scenarios we see with ExpressRoute. If you have petabytes of data, ExpressRoute's the only pragmatic way to get that data into the cloud, right? So there you may need a 10 gig circuit from us and just blast that up into Azure storage. That's one of the key scenarios. And so that traffic would run over that dark blue channel that you see there. We call that Azure public peering. But also other services that are running in Azure are accessed that way, things that you would normally access through the internet. And then the top line is what we call Microsoft peering. That's into the Microsoft cloud. So that's a way to get to Office 365. So Exchange Online, SharePoint Online, Skype for Business, Enterprise Voice. We also allow you to get to CRM online through that Microsoft channel. So I'll cover that in a moment. There's a lot more nuances as we start doing Microsoft peering. So flexibility is important. So we look at various scenarios that we can enable for you. One of the key scenarios is allowing you to have your own hardware close to Microsoft's data center, but not in the data center. So at scale, at our massive scale, we don't allow you to put your gear in our DCs, right? You get virtual machines, basically. You get services from us. But if you have some legacy hardware, or you have some bleeding edge hardware, and you want access to that, and you want to take advantage of the cloud, one of the key scenarios is that you can put your gear at a MeetMe site, an ExpressRoute MeetMe site at the Colo Center. And we try to put these within 2 milliseconds of our data center. So imagine you put your storage area, your network, your SAN in the colo facility. It's 2 milliseconds away from Azure Compute. So you can use web front ends and blast into that. At 2 milliseconds, it feels like you're in our data center. And again, that's what I mean. We try to make the network just disappear. So that's a good scenario for us. And then from a compliance, really likes this, you know, from our enterprise customers. Because you own that SAN, you've run at that cage at the colo facility, and theoretically, I've never seen this happen, but theoretically, you can snip the cable and you've disconnected from the Microsoft network. But you have physical custody of that data. But you still take advantage of the cloud. So we do see a lot of scenarios of this where you need low latency, and now because it's so it's low latency, 1 to 2 milliseconds, it's private connectivity, it's very predictable. So that's one of the key scenarios that we see. And so with ExpressRoute, I'll talk about it in a moment, we put our ExpressRoute routers in these neutral locations outside of our data center. So that allows you then this flexibility to come in with this model at the ExpressRoute MeetMe sites. Now, if you're not in the MeetMe site, one thing you can do is get layer 2 or Ethernet connectivity. So that's kind of a low-cost way to get in. The challenge here is that you have to manage your layer 3 connectivity. But you can work with our Ethernet partners. Not being in the colo, they're in the colo for you, basically, so connecting you in. Now, your latency is just physics, right? So as far away as you are, at speed of light, that's what your performance will be. So for the best latency, you need to be in the colo. You're further away, it's still a good option, and we do have a lot of customers do that. And now you can come into our cloud. And the last thing, the model we have, is we make ExpressRoute part of your WAN. So if you have an IP VPN, MPLS carrier that manages your WAN at layer 3, we can make Microsoft just yet another site on that WAN. So we have customers with 300 or more sites in their WAN. Microsoft's is number 301, 302, 303, 304, 305, and I think 306 with that customer. Right? And we do encourage you as a best practice to have multiple MeetMe sites with ExpressRoute for disaster recovery. Now, our internal architecture is built around HA, high availability, and that's why we're able to offer such a strong SLA around this. Fundamentally, the implementation details, we have a pair of routers in there that when you connect in through a partner, you have an active-active configuration. And so I'll talk a bit more about the bandwidth in a moment. But these are the three fundamental deployment models that you have to get into ExpressRoute. And in each of these models, though, you'll need to work with the partner. So you'll need to work with the colo facility, who's an ExpressRoute partner, or you'll need to work with the Ethernet connectivity provider, who's an ExpressRoute partner, or you need to work with your IP VPN, who's an ExpressRoute partner. And we actually have a little bit more flexibility if you want to use somebody that's not an existing partner. Those network people are very savvy. They can get you connected into one of the colo facilities where we have our MeetMe, or one of the MeetMe sites where we have our routers. And so you do still have that flexibility as well. And we have this very well documented on our web pages about how you get connectivity to us. So you should mention that we have a global network, right? So with that, we have 35 ExpressRoute locations. Here are the cities. One thing I don't think we publicize a lot, we continue to expand on this. So for example, Paris is a new site for us. That's available. Las Vegas is also a new site for us. So we're continuing to expand, and so Paris and Las Vegas are interesting to us because they're not near our data center. We actually have a MeetMe site here in Atlanta. So if you want to be in Equinix Atlanta, you can come in here and then blast into Azure. Now, one of the things we provide for you, we have two fundamental SKUs for ExpressRoute. The ExpressRoute's basically the standard SKU and the premium. With standard, ExpressRoute's a little different than Azure. Azure, you think about regions, right? So Yushin showed you US West Central, South Central, US East, US West. You can be in these various regions throughout the world. ExpressRoute is a bigger scope than that. We think in terms of geos, right? So we think in terms of like North America as the geo. So if I come in into Atlanta right here, we give you connectivity to every data center that we have in North America. So if you want to go to Toronto, if you want to go to Quebec City, you want to go to US West and Bay, if you want to go to our data center in San Antonio, you want to go to our data center in US East in Virginia, that's all possible with that. So if, when you come in with basically our standard SKU, you have connectivity everywhere in that geo. Same thing, if I land in Singapore, I can get in Singapore. If I land in Australia, let's say I'm in Sydney, I can go to Sydney or Melbourne. Right, so I stay within that geo, or if I'm in Japan, Tokyo and Osaka. We also have ExpressRoute Premium, which is also very interesting now because now we open up our global network to you. So now, again, if you get ExpressRoute Premium and you come into Atlanta, you can have your virtual network in Singapore, you can have it in Sydney, you can have it in Tokyo, Amsterdam, in Chicago. But wherever you want to go on our backbone network, we'll carry all that traffic. So we do give you global connectivity in that. And it's kind of, here's an interesting word. So if you leave with nothing from this, remember this one word, multi-global. If you think about it, it makes no sense. I mean, how can it be multi-global? There's only one global. Well, we're Microsoft, we invent things. And so we actually have multi-global. We have different clouds. And so we have a China cloud. And that China cloud is its own network island from our perspective, from a private connectivity perspective. So we have ExpressRoute in Beijing and in Shanghai. You'd work with a partner there, it'd be China Telecom, you'd come in through there. But you can't get back to the rest of our commercial cloud, all those orange dots I showed you, you can't get there, you can't get to our data center. We announced a German cloud. Again, that's another network island. So we have ExpressRoute in Frankfurt and Berlin, but you're kind of stuck in Germany for that. And we did that for compliance reasons. We have somebody else running that cloud on our behalf. It's all Microsoft software, but there's an operating company running that for us, similar with China, and also with the US government. So we have four sites for the US government. We're in New York, DC, Chicago, and Dallas. We have another company running that. That's all US cleared personnel running that cloud for us. So these are four different implementations, if you will, of ExpressRoute. We have the commercial one with all the orange dots, the MeetMe sites. We have the Gov cloud, we have the German cloud, and we have the China cloud. And so I mentioned the partners. Here's that we have a growing ecosystem of partners with ExpressRoute. And so this is as published again on our webpage. So if you have any issues, we also have a team that helps people on board to ExpressRoute. So again, we just want to make this as simple as possible for you to come on board and consume our cloud. So we've made some progress since last Ignite. We've announced ExpressRoute for O65 and CRM Online. We've changed the billing model with ExpressRoute. Our fundamental goal on ExpressRoute is not to make money. We just want to make it simple for you to come in. And so you see a lot of price reductions that we went through, or a pretty substantial percentage price reduction. We do have two different billing models. You can either pay as you go, if you will, on meter data, so basically on the egress traffic, we have a lower rate than the internet rate, or you can get unlimited data for ExpressRoute. It's really up to you. We don't care. Again, we're not here to make money on an ExpressRoute. We're just trying to make it simple. The cloud is fundamentally commoditized. So the Microsoft strategy in the cloud is to make money at the high-end services. So again, we just want to make it easy for you to get into our cloud. And if you haven't noticed, it's a very, very different Microsoft over the past couple of years. So over 30% of our virtual machines are running Linux. That's great for us. We're very active with open source. So again, we don't care what you're running in our cloud. We just want to make it easy for you to get to our cloud. One of the features that we're not going to talk a lot about, but we introduced BGP communities so that if you want, let's say you get ExpressRoute Premium, we're going to advertise a bunch of prefixes at you that may overwhelm your network. One thing you may want to do is scope it down and say, I only care about prefixes from a particular region. So maybe I only want the prefixes for US West data center. So you can start filtering on the communities that you have. Similarly, we have the communities for the higher level services. So maybe I only want Skype traffic on ExpressRoute for Skype. And you can filter on the Skype community. One thing that's not on our list, but we also now have portal support. One of the major complaints, which we acknowledge, was using PowerShell to configure ExpressRoute was a bit challenging. And so now you can use the portal. And so you'll see some videos that we have on how easy it now is to use ExpressRoute. So one of the things that we offered, I mentioned the Ultra Performance Gateway. Now we give you more choices on how you can blast into the virtual networks with ExpressRoute. So we do focus in on the performance side, though we do see with IPVPNs, a lot of customers want lower bandwidths in the 100, 500 megabit range. But if you do have performance needs, we now let you pick which one you want. So the Ultra Perf Gateway will get you up to 10 gigabits to a virtual network. And now I mentioned earlier our architecture on the hardware side is active-active. So you can actually get up to 20 gigabits performance coming into the virtual network. Now the thing is about that, when we get that kind of bandwidth coming in into our networks, is that our SLA is on the 10 gig, and you buy a 10 gig ExpressRoute circuit. And so if we lost one of the routers or a router card or something like that, we'd fail over into that. So with that ExpressRoute 10 gig circuit, you get to 20 gigabits, and then you can get your ultra-perf gateway getting 10 gigs into each of the virtual networks. Basically, you need the gateway to connect to the ExpressRoute circuit. One thing about this, in terms of the gateway SKUs, we are deprecating the basic gateway SKU. So that one, that gateway SKU, we can't give you the same SLA. And we want just a simple story to say ExpressRoute is the most reliable way to get to the Microsoft Cloud Services. So we're going to stop supporting, not stop supporting, or stop letting you create these basic gateway SKUs. So you start need to use the standard or the better. And you'll see that again. It's pretty well documented on our web pages. So one of the challenges we had with ExpressRoute with customers is it working, right? So, and that's something very fundamental. So is connectivity established? And so now we're making that a lot easier for you to understand. So now with our portal and the portal support, you can see more operational insights. So do I have layer 2 connectivity? Well, that's kind of fundamental. If that's not there, you're not going to experience ExpressRoute. One thing I should mention is that once you get ExpressRoute working, it's super reliable, and that's why you see our confidence now to raise the SLA around that. Once you have connectivity, is routing configured, right? That's another fundamental thing. And then I mentioned that one way to think about ExpressRoute is that we advertise prefixes to you, right? So are you getting the prefixes that you expect from us? So that's, we're just looking at how we can make it easier and easier for you to diagnose when things start going wrong in your network. And so we'll put out more best practice guidance on this, but how do I debug ExpressRoute? And again, it is one of our most reliable networking services that we have. And I guess, and fundamentally, at the end of the day, what you most care about is the data actually flowing, right? And so are the byte counters going moving in the direction you expect them, you know, which is up, it can only go up. So ingress, egress bytes. So I mentioned that there's some nuances with the Microsoft peering. We have disabled self-service of Microsoft peering right now for ExpressRoute. I think it was my only experience at Microsoft where we actually, and in the cloud, which is fundamentally all about self-service, where we now make it not self-service. And there's some fundamental issues, and we've had a lot of talks here at Ignite talking about those. Issues around asymmetric routing. When you have Office 365, you have an internet path, you have the private connectivity path, it sets you up for asymmetric routing if you're not careful. We've had customers that encountered some issues, and so we were so concerned about this, about the onboarding experience, that we've done multiple things to address that. One is to disable self-service so that we now need to talk to you if you want to use ExpressRoute for 365. Now, ExpressRoute for Azure is basically on autopilot from an operational perspective on our side. We'll continue to enhance it and add a lot more features, but it's really easy to set up, relatively speaking. And so we do recommend all enterprises use ExpressRoute to get to Azure. Now, note that we designed ExpressRoute to address the needs of the Fortune 2000. It doesn't mean if you're not a Fortune 2000 enterprise, that you can't use ExpressRoute, you still should consider using it because it's very reliable. But I just want you to understand our mindset. We did expect a certain amount of networking expertise there. But we do recommend that for all enterprises. It is a great networking experience. Now, but when we get to Office, Office and SaaS services in general are designed to be consumed by the internet. Even Azure itself, the majority of our customers, we expect to use the internet to reach Azure. But for the enterprises, and particularly large enterprises, they want private connectivity. So SaaS services like Office were designed for the internet. So for that reason, we only recommend ExpressRoute for Office 365 in very specific scenarios. If you have regulatory needs, we'll let you come on. If you have performance issues, and so we ask you to do a network assessment and make sure that ExpressRoute's appropriate for you. And so we have some talks. We have a talk right after this one in this room about how to create the virtual data center. But you'll see some of the nuances that you need to really understand if you're going to adopt ExpressRoute for Office 365. I'll say again, though, ExpressRoute is one of our most reliable services, and when we get it working, it works really, really well. And again, that's why you see that SLA from us. So in terms of next steps, if you're using ExpressRoute for 365, keep using it. It's great, very reliable. You know how to use that. If you're new to that, again, you need to work with your account teams so that we can make sure we have a deep technical discussion make sure you understand the nuances of asymmetric routing, and then we'll go up and enable your subscription for that. And again, with our partner strategy, you'll use a network partner, one of our partners, to do that network assessment. And again, this is all to be very transparent with you as the customer, to make sure you understand all these nuances and so that you have a good onboarding experience, that you have a good networking experience, and that the service that we offer meet your expectations. And I kind of covered this already. So kind of summarizing ExpressRoute, we have a growing ecosystem. Multi-global, remember that word? Have you heard it here for the first time? We're focusing more on diagnostics. So we have the higher SLA, but we do want to make it easier for you to use this. So the diagnostics, the monitoring, that will be coming. More features, our best practice guidance is used multiple ExpressRoute sites. So you can have multiple ExpressRoute circuits in different geos or different meet-me sites hitting the same virtual network. Right, so now you have control from a disaster recovery. You'll learn more about that in the next session that's in this room on how to build the virtual data center. And then make sure you're aware of the nuances around ExpressRoute. So we're very bullish on hybrid connectivity, you know, whether we continue to enhance very aggressively our VPN strategy. So you saw Yushin talk about active-active. And so we're very concerned about that, the performance. One thing we didn't mention here is that under the covers, we've been doing a lot of performance enhancements so that when the gateways fail over, that there's a smaller time that you're out, right? Because we need to reestablish the IPsec connectivity. But that overall VPN experience is improving. And again, we'll be adding a lot more diagnostics around that. Looking at the flexible topologies, focusing on reliability. We have a web application firewall that's in preview. Unfortunately, we named the talk so that you will never find it. It's customer-facing applications, that's at 12:30 today. So we do have two more networking talks throughout the day. If you want to learn about IPv6 and web application firewall, that talk at 12:30. And again, VNet peering and virtual data center topologies will be in this room. Great. Thank you very much for being with us on Friday morning.